true, that spiritual, actual, factual answers to questions he asking. You find them inside you, recite you, reciting the records of Kashuk. We laughing, we drafting the passion through fabric. It's time for that comedy, dramedy, all of the fanciest, catchiest acronyms. Listeners, listen, we traveling. Consciousness is always unraveling. The reading you're having is mapping you back to your natural habitat. Abracadabra, it's magic, let's pass it. To top it off, the host are the classiest. Now, what were you asking for? All of the answers, what? All the answers.
Well, we're here. We did it.
We're here. We're on.
This thing happened this morning where I was like, I had 900 things I wanted to talk about. Now I'm like, what were they? Do you have anything that you remember from what we've been talking about?
Well, I remember the remainder from two episodes ago.
Okay.
Where we talked about, it was an ego question that we were both struggling with about like reach and,
right,
and importance and... So, and that was something we kind of put a pin in to say, like, that's actually an interesting topic to explore. So that may be something we get into today if it feels inspired to do so.
I guess I find it.
But we're not as presently sitting in it as we were then, I think, probably.
Yeah. I mean, for me, I can only say for myself, it's not up right now, but it was up that day for sure.
Yeah.
Yeah. I can happily talk about this. I'd like to talk about it if you're down.
Yeah. I love it. Look, that's about like philosophy and personal growth. You know, I love that shit.
Yeah. Yeah. So, I mean, I have so many things to say about this. Well, the first thing I want to say is something that came up yesterday with a good friend of mine that is human design related, that is related to this topic, which is the difference between people with definition in the solar plexus, which is the emotional center, and people who do not have definition in the solar plexus. You're defined there or no? I can't remember.
Look, here's what I have to do. Give me a moment to look at my phone. So the things I can't hang on to are like, I can't hang on to the different attributes of the different signs of the zodiac. Just, I lose them. They go out of my head.
Yeah.
And also I can't even hang on to my own human design.
I get it. It's very common.
Except, okay. I also have open head and ajna. That's the one thing I do know. But so just give me a second to pull it up on my phone.
Take your time. I wonder if Desmond's going to be able to hear in the background Squeezle the dog snoring.
I can hear it.
It's pretty cute. Maybe that makes up for the noise of it.
Okay. So,
The bottom right.
All the way bottom right. That is defined for me.
Okay. So the difference between emotion, that's the emotional center. So you have what we call definition in the emotional center. And people who don't have definition in the emotional center, it's a very different kind of person. Like, I mean, all these things are different. But one of the things that's different is I'm really learning about it because I live with someone who has open emotional center. And one of my dear friends who I speak with regularly by voice memo has open emotional center. A piece of feedback they will both give me from time to time that I'll get so confused by is they'll go, well, it's not that big a deal. It's just this. And I'll get mad, triggered, because I'm like, what makes you think I think this is a big deal? And now we're having a fight about that. And so what I came to realize, my friend and I were talking openly about the differences between this, when the center is defined and when it's not, is she hears me say something like, I was sharing with her a thing about a relational thing with a friend where I said, I'm just so sad. I can't talk with this one friend about this one thing. We used to be able to talk about everything. And she was really baffled. She was like, why would you be sad about that? And I was like, because I used to be able to talk to her about everything. And now she's got a boundary. She doesn't want to hear about this one topic. And I'm just having a little grief about like, she doesn't want to talk about that. So now I'm a little sad about it. And she was like, well, it's not a big deal. It's just like, you can talk to other people about that. And I'm like, I know. And she's like, so then why is it a big deal? And I'm like, it's not a big deal, but I'm having a feeling and you're my friend. So I'm sharing with you a piece of grief just to share it because that's what people do.
And this person has undefined.
Open. Now, we both paused and went like, wait, this is an open emotional center thing because Eric will do the same. He'll be like, well, you can just think of it like this. And I'm like, I don't need you to correct how I'm thinking about it. I'm thinking about it just fine. I'm just having a feeling that I'm naming for the sake of naming it.
Yeah.
Because when I name a feeling, it helps the feeling move through and then I'm no longer have the feeling. Case in point, here we are 2 weeks later and I can't even remember the thing we were talking about because I processed it. I don't feel hung up on it because I processed it. Now, for people with emotional definition, processing a feeling is so important. It's also kind of constant. Everything that happens, we have a feeling about. And if you have to sort of teach people that therapeutically, like, are you having a feeling? And then we learn, I sure fucking am. But people with open emotional center are different about it. They are inconsistently having emotions in that center. And oftentimes, the only emotions they're having are the amplification of our emotions. So for them, it's very overwhelming when these big feelings come into the field, because they're alone, they're not having them. But we walk in the room and it's huge all of a sudden. And they're like, I'm exhausted, I'm overwhelmed, let's make it small again.
Right. So that logical, like, hey, you should think of it differently, is actually a self-protection for them.
That's right. And so it ends up sounding to me like they're saying, don't feel your feelings are too much. Why are you overreacting? And I know enough now to be like, I'm actually not overreacting. I'm just having a feeling and it will pass. So, okay. So that's my first thought about all this is I'm like, oh, isn't that interesting? A feeling came up. I was like, we don't have reach and it doesn't matter. If there's not thousands of people listening, then it doesn't exist. And then I said that and I was mad and sad about it. And then I don't feel mad and sad about it now. It just came up. I processed it, not just there, by the way. I sat with that for a couple days before, a couple days after. It wasn't the fastest one for me, but I kept feeling into it and being present with it and giving it its space and giving it its due inside myself with containment. And then it just isn't up anymore. And so that's an example of what it can look like for people listening. If you have definition in the solar plexus, that's a way to be healthy with your feelings, is to have them as long as you need to have them.
Yeah.
Stay connected, be with them. Don't let the people around you who might be overwhelmed by your feelings tell you you shouldn't be having so many, or you should be more spiritual about it, or you should be logical about it. You're going to have them until they're done being had.
Yeah.
The question is, are you going to be at peace with it or not? So you may as well just lean in.
Tracks for the, it's not just about the other people too. It's like for myself, I can say, you know, recently I was just sitting there while you were talking about that and being so aware of how not in my fear and feelings I am right now. And no actual circumstances have changed from 2 weeks ago.
Right.
But I was so in my feelings and my fears and my everything, but I also was so miserable with it that I wasn't really, which meant I was afraid of those feelings. So I was holding them off while still having them. It was that you're stuck in that, like, this is so overwhelming that I can't deal with it. But
I won't deal with it.
It's still there.
Yeah.
And then when you finally deal with it, it's only marginally more painful for a moment and not even. And I'm so free of that right now. I'm actually a little worried that I'm
dissociating,
you know? So like trying to like, uh-huh. Are you dissociating? Cause you seem pretty free of that fear right now. Anyway.
No, it's probably that you processed it over time.
Yeah. But it wasn't until I really started saying to people, you know, and that's how I have to process. I can rarely process by myself. I don't do it.
Yeah.
But if I finally allowed myself just to say to somebody, I'm really overwhelmed, I'm really freaking out, I'm really having a hard time, this is really overwhelming, all those things.
Yeah.
Then I finally was able to sort of trigger it into dealing with it myself.
I fully get that. You know, you also have, if I recall correctly, one of the manifestor channels, which is, I think it goes from your spleen to your throat. Is that right?
Yes. Spleen is the middle-y dude?
No. Spleen is all the way on the left.
All the way on the left. I have, it's undefined for me.
So what channel do you have that goes to your throat?
From that center guy?
The G center?
Not the bottom center, but the second from the bottom.
The sacral.
Sacral. From my sacral and then also from my...
G center.
Also from the one we were just talking about. The
emotional. Solar plexus.
God, I suck. The solar plexus and my sacral both go... One goes the other side.
Oh, they both go to your throat.
Yeah.
Okay, well, so let's pause here because that's important. So let's hear what Cassidy just said so that anybody who has any emotional center, any of the motors. So he's got two motors, the emotional center, solar plexus, bottom right, and the sacral motor, which is that thing that gives generators our constant energy that we have. That's like the engine of the Cassidy machine. His emotions and his machine engine both connect directly to his throat. And he just shared with us, I can't get through my feelings without telling people about it, talking about it.
Yeah.
That's because your emotions are directly connected to your throat. So you process verbally.
Yeah.
And I would say astrologically, you've got your fucking triple Gemini, aren't you?
I'm Sun, Moon, and...
Venus.
No, Mercury.
Okay.
Sun, Moon, and Mercury are Gemini.
Yeah, there's a lot of fucking Gemini. Mm-hmm. And Geminis are the most talky-talky social butterfly communication machines that exist. So to have these huge three placements, of course you have to process it with people and verbally. And I would even offer, do you remember when we had the astrologer buddy of mine, Ben Ismail, on here?
Mm-hmm.
And he said, you and you two, he was looking at our charts together. He said, sometimes there's a little bump in your communication, isn't there? And I was like, yes.
Yes.
And he was like, probably you talk over each other and it annoys you sometimes, but the other one isn't annoyed. And then it flip flops and they're annoyed and you're not annoyed. I was like, yes,
yep.
That's what happens. And it's because you have that channel that goes all the way to the throat and I only have half of it. So you compromise me there. So what that means in human design language is no matter what you and I do forever, there's no fixing this and nobody's wrong. I will always feel a little fucking interrupted by you because I'm communicationally compromised in the chart by you. You have, when this is for education purposes only, for when you have a full channel, but someone you're relating to has half that channel known as a gate. That's called a compromise dynamic between the two of you. So the person with only the gate, not the full channel, will always feel compromised on that topic, the topic of that channel in the presence of that person. So for me, understanding that, I got that about our charts a long time ago. It was honestly, it was after I brought it up on here. I'm sure I was like,
yeah.
Oh, you cut me off. And you were like, you cut me off. And Rami and I even talked about it. And they were like, you do cut him off. They were all like defending you. And I was like, but I'm cutting him off because he cuts me off. Like, it was like I was like, hold on. I got to look at the charts. And then I looked at it and I was like, oh, I feel always a little compromised on that front with you. So I was overcompensating to like, sort of like make sure I'm heard, which was creating more tension.
Right.
So what I then did was like, just anytime, Katie, you notice that you're like trying to make sure you're heard by Cassidy, just stop talking. Because he's going to talk and he's going to talk and he's going to talk. Then he's going to stop talking. When he stops talking, then you say words. Like, but in other words, I'm aware of the reaction that the compromise creates inside me. So I just don't engage.
Right.
And that is the power of understanding your dynamic with someone through the fucking human design chiz art.
Yeah, I like that because it also, it's the whole idea that A, no one's wrong, but also B, it's like in a sense, it's a shared responsibility to the quote problem. If you see it as a problem.
Sure.
Right. It's like, it's because of our channel that it's created that you're going to feel dominated by or whatever, compromised by me, which means I'm going to quote compromise you. So, and you're going to feel compromised. And like, I need to be aware of that because like, no, I could probably
abuse it.
Help to, yeah, I can abuse that. And if you can abuse it, it also means you can unabuse it. And then you also can be aware that like, oh, I'm just feeling fucking compromised. Regardless of what Cass is doing to a certain extent.
I would frame it more like, it's not that I feel compromised, it's that I am. That's an important distinction only because in human design, it's like, one thing people will do with things like this, because we're all just trying to get along, is people will be like, they'll minimize the compromise so that it's not so bad. In other words, I could say like, oh, I'm feeling like, and then that's actually a diminishment of what's actually happening for me. I actually verbally with you am compromised. So for me, there's empowerment in that because I can go, okay, that's going to occur. And he's not doing that to me. That's what occurs between our auras. Cassie's not at fault for what his aura is. So I just wait. It's fine. But you can see how there's so many little pieces to work through on any little thing like this in a chart where you have to relationally, right? We're all learning about like just dealing with each other. I just find this system to be such a tool to take all the personalization out of it. I was like, I had this narrative running that like, you don't care about what I say and you think you're more important than me and men are always doing this to women. And I got this whole fucking thing going on. But then if I could see it in the chart and ask you a question, and we can talk openly about it, it takes all that sting off of it. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I really appreciate that distinction of it's not It's not about that you feel compromised. You might feel compromised, but that's not what this is about. You are compromised. But what we do have some control over is how we react or respond. And that's where we, where you do get to take control of your own response.
Yeah.
Yeah. And that, and that's where the quote feeling comes in also.
Like, right.
You can control how you feel about it to a certain extent. I mean, obviously.
By changing your response. And here's a better example, maybe. So in Eric and my dynamic, I dominate him. This is different from compromise. I compromise him.
Bedroom?
On his penis.
Just his penis.
I just put, I take my dominance. I put it on his penis. I rub it around. Everybody's happy.
Do you have a cream called dominance?
So I compromise him one place. He compromises me one place. And then I dominate him in two very key places. Now, listen.
I can't.
Take it down or not.
I can't.
Because I understand that. What's so funny about it is I'll meet his friends. Like, they come over and I've gotten to know them better. And they'll say things to me like, wait, you said what to Eric? And I'll be like, I told him he can't do that. That's not cool. And they're like, you talked like that to Eric? And I'm like, what Eric are you interacting with? And they're like, I would never, ever, ever think there was room to talk to Eric like that. Eric is the guy that talks like that. And I'm like, I literally don't know who you're talking about.
That's so interesting.
Because I have a lot of dominance channels with him. And he talks about it with me. And I'll say to him like, oh, that's the dominance channels. Like, he's like, you're so alpha, this, that. And I'm like, I do not feel very alpha with you. I feel like I'm just trying to survive over here. But I do see when I watch him with his friends, he is dominating. Huh. Not with me though. and not with, I'm sure, a lot of other people. But like the people in his life, he's chosen, interestingly, he's got the dominance channels. So it's because I know that, I practice with Eric just going slower in general and just kind of leaving more room than I might otherwise, because I know I'm going to dominate no matter what I do. Just sitting there, I'm dominating him. So I make room for him consciously, even when to me, I'm like, there's no need to make room here in this moment. Why would I make room for him? He's just standing there silently. But I do, because I know about this. And it doesn't change the dominance. I don't lose anything. But also, I know he has open solar plexus. So my feelings are so much for him. It's a trip and a half. It's so cool to watch it play out and be like, all right, Ruben, you can either play with these tools or you can let them work against you. What would you like? Do you want a nice, easy life? Do you want to make it harder on yourself? It all comes back to me, to the need to letting go of the need to be right about anything. And instead going like, do you want this to work?
Yeah.
So back to your question.
I don't remember what it was.
We were talking about, oh, the show doesn't reach a billion people. Yeah. And so the value of it, you know, does it have value? So how, that was me saying a lot of words about that. Where is it for you?
Oh, yeah. I don't know that it's not that feeling in general is not attached necessarily to the show. But I do find the topic intriguing because I feel like it's a pretty universal concept for everybody in some aspect of their life. And then I said that and I realized there are no universal concepts, not according to human design and all these other systems. It's like we'd think the things are universal.
Well, as soon as you said it, I was like, well, you would think that as a three.
Yeah. We think that things are universal. Oh, right. Enneagram teaches us. All these things teach us that, like, this thing you thought was the only was, oh, well, that's a foundational concept that everybody has a piece of.
Yeah.
No.
Nah.
Not really.
Yeah. No.
But I do, obviously, as a three Enneagram, and probably you'll find it in my chart somewhere, the feeling of recognition of my impact is vital to that impact having impact.
Like, it doesn't exist if it's not recognized.
Yeah. Tree falls in the forest, doesn't make a sound.
Right.
And yeah, we have a bunch of kids in the show that I'm working on right now. And so there's a lot of backstage time, especially with the understudy kids. So we sometimes have educational, deep philosophical conflicts, concepts. And we were trying to teach them the idea. First, we made a joke about Schrodinger's cat, and then we had to explain what Schrodinger's cat is. For those that don't remember, Schrodinger's cat, you put a cat in a box, and there's a vial of poison, and there's a there's an isotope in there. And if the isotope fires off, it breaks the poison and the cat dies. But the isotope doesn't necessarily fire off, so you don't know. But until you open the box to check, it is both dead and alive at the same time.
Right.
So it's the idea of infinite possibility.
I am so sorry. The cat, do you hear the cat?
Yeah.
Let me make that stop because she's trapped somewhere and it's making me sad.
Pause.
And she's screaming. I'm so sorry.
It's all right.
One second. Ugh. Okay, cat. You run my life. I understand. Oh, you just walked in now. You could have done that the whole time. Oh, God. All right, I'll leave this open for you. Crikey. Okay. I need to just say, no matter what I do, if I close the door, she meows to get in. If I leave the door open, she meows to go outside. If she's outside, she meows to come in. If she's inside, she meows to go out. So it's like every time I'm taping something or teaching a class, I'm like, this time I'll have the door open because then it's like no matter what I do. Okay. You were saying Schrodinger's cat, you're explaining it to the kids.
So then that got into, damn it, how did that relate? Oh,
Oh yeah. If a tree falls and nobody heard it. Yeah.
And then we got on that topic.
Right.
You're talking about that perception is what creates the whether it's a thing or not.
Right.
So if you don't perceive the cat, until you observe the cat is both dead and alive. Such a weird thing that's what they chose as the illustration, whether you murder a cat or not.
Speaking of cats that we're murdering.
Maybe. I have a box with some poison if you'd like to.
So wait a minute.
Aww.
Just one question about Schrodinger's cat. I forgot about the nuance of that. So, but the cat isn't dead or alive objectively at the same moment.
It is, in according to quantum physics, which kind of goes along with your billions of sheets of glass idea.
How does it go? How does that?
Isn't that infinite reality, or is that time? That's more time.
That's time. But wait.
That's time.
How does physics say that the cat is dead and alive? I would think
quantum physics, which is much more theoretical and woo-woo.
Yeah.
But it's that it is because possibility is reality.
It's possible that it's dead and it's possible that it's alive.
But by saying that, according to, I'm not very good at explaining it because I don't quite grasp it myself, but they aren't just saying it's possible that it's dead and alive. They're saying that basically, according to sort of their precepts, it is both dead and alive in infinite universes.
Hold on. I'm going to see I need to see what other people say. I want to understand this a little bit better. Schrodinger's cat is a famous thought experiment that demonstrates the idea in quantum physics that tiny particles can be in two states at once until they're observed.
Yeah.
Okay, that makes sense. It asks you to imagine a cat in a box with a mechanism that might kill it until you look inside, the cat is both alive and dead at the same time. As a result of its fate being linked to a random subatomic event that may or may not occur, this experiment viewed this way is described as a paradox. This thought experiment was devised by whoever in discussion with whoever. In Schrodinger's original formulation, a cat, a flask of poison, and a radioactive source are placed in a sealed box. If an internal thing happens, the flask is shattered, releasing the poison, killing the cat. Copenhagen interpretation implies that after a while, the cat is simultaneously dead and alive. Yet when one looks in the box, one sees the cat either alive or dead, not both alive and dead. This poses the question of when exactly quantum superposition ends and reality resolves into one possibility or another. Interesting. You know what's interesting about this is I think it's a bad example. Like, in other words, the quantum physics idea makes total sense to me, that two particles, subatomic particles, can be in two locations at the same time until observed. But a physical cat can't be, because it's many particles. And many, many particles, when they gather into a larger object, like, can't biolocate.
Right.
So why did they have to use the cat as an example? I think he was just trying to make the point.
Yeah, but it's still, I think probably, I don't know, because I am not Niels Bohr or whoever it was.
Uh-huh.
But my understanding, though, is that he would argue, no, it is the same.
I know, but I don't get it. It doesn't seem the same.
Yeah, it's harder to grasp when it gets to the physical world.
I mean, I can't even understand it on the particle level, but not, which is physical. Anyway, Schrodinger's cat.
Because I have had this definitely with some of our discussions where I've been like, yes, but it's not. And you're like, but it just is. And so like you do
have what's an example?
I wish I could think of an example, but like examples that have to do with like multiple timelines or universes or things like that. But I can't think of a specific example. But like you actually have, I feel like, a greater capacity.
I hear you.
To receive and accept, like, okay. And so this one's hanging you up. It's funny to me.
No, that makes total sense. I think it's because, again, I understand so much about the quantum field, but what makes the quantum field is quantum particles. They're tiny. Uh-huh. That's the kind of the point. So if it's a big set of particles, they don't behave that way.
Right. You classify that in the 3D world that's more that operates.
No, it's just, it's not 3D versus non-3D. It's more, it's just too heavy to do that to. It's not, it's all in the 3D world because it's all, everything.
A cat's too big to have possibilities.
A cat's too big to exist and to be dead and not dead.
Yeah.
Interesting. This is fun. I like it. I like anything that makes my brain actually go, huh?
Well, and this was the argument we had with the kids. The kids were like, just like at a certain point, we're like, no.
Right.
It's either dead or alive.
Right.
That's it. There's just no. And then we talked about if a tree falls in the forest, that's how we got on this topic. And there's no one here to, and then there's no one there to hear it. Does it make a sound? But then we were like, that's actually impossible. Something will perceive it.
Right.
So then we were like, okay, if you have a sealed room.
Right.
That is soundproofed and a thing tips over inside that room and makes a sound, but nobody can hear it. And there are no even microscopic amoebas in that room because it's a clean room. Does it actually make a sound? Because sound is different. Sound requires perception to complete the equation in my head.
Right.
Like it's a sound wave, but it's not sound until it is heard, maybe. Or felt or perceived.
I mean, but you could still say that the wave exists whether you receive it or not.
And the walls felt it.
Right.
So it did make a sound.
Yeah. I feel very much in the camp of it being received is not proof of its existence. Like in those thought experiments, I'm never like, no, someone needed to be there for the tree to have fallen. I'm like, no, it fell.
Well, that would then imply that the cat is definitely dead or alive because cat perceived it.
Well, yeah. I mean, the cat is either dead or alive. There may be like a Mila moment where the cat is both. But so, okay, grounding this a little more, coming back to...
How does this have to do with whether we're successful as a podcast?
So here's my question for you is, as a three right now, would you... Do you think that it matters less to you because you're getting that feedback elsewhere through the show, through whatever in your life somewhere you're getting it? Or is it not that?
That's a good question. It's funny because I'm in some ways we could argue I'm not getting it from the show because I'm not performing.
Yeah.
But I am.
For anybody who doesn't understand, Cass is understudying a play right now. So he's watching it a lot.
Yeah. And I'm sitting backstage all the time.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, let's take as a given that we, both of us, have not felt called to do the podcast for quite a while. And now we're finally feeling called again.
Okay.
But what was it that made us not feel called to do it? Was it frustration? Was it just getting too busy? Was it emotionally being wrung out? I just didn't have bandwidth.
What was it for you?
Yeah. It's a good question. I think I was just...
But what does that have to do with the first thing I'm asking you?
The first thing is, am I bothered by lack of reach? Is that the question?
No, I first asked you, because you asked me about, I was talking about my relationship to, if a million people aren't listening, does it matter?
Yeah.
And I was feeling mad about it and hurt and like, I don't want to bother with this, right? And then I processed it and then I just don't feel that way, which gives me more energy to do it.
Yeah.
Processing it gives you energy. That's the reason, by the way, to process things. So then I said, how is that for you? It doesn't reach a billion people. So what does that do for you? And you were saying, I think, you tell me if I'm off before, like you're not having that. You don't feel bothered by that. And I was asking, if you're not bothered by it, is it because you're getting that need met in some other way in your life or not? I mean, it's not true.
Yeah, I don't think I was Yeah, I wasn't really bothered by it. Also, and this is maybe an admission, like we got a message a few times along the way that was like, this is going to be huge and you're going to, it's going to make an enormous impact.
We did?
You had people in your psychic world saying like, Katie, within the year, this will be
what?
One of the most important things you've ever done. Yeah. We could go back and find it. It's in the podcast somewhere. It's in the
I don't
archives.
Have any recollection of that.
Yeah,
and I believe you.
Yeah. And you shared it with me. And I, you know, was still enough of a skeptic in a lot of ways that I was like.
But where was I in the world when I said that? Do you know? Was this Colorado?
Might have been Colorado.
Wow.
It was
okay.
Early on in the podcast. It was within the first year, probably.
But most important thing you're going to do doesn't mean have a big reach.
No, it was also there's going to be millions of people and this is going to be what you're going to be doing. I don't know about millions, but like this is going to be like I got the impression that you were saying this is going to be an income generator. You guys are going to have, you know,
someone to find this and I want to hear it.
Okay.
I believe you.
Yeah.
I really do. I just have zero recollection.
That's so funny.
But I have zero recollection of anything.
That's true.
Not a fair measure of anything. So, okay.
And so we're getting that message and I'm enough of a cynic that I was like, okay,
maybe.
Sure.
Yeah.
Whatever.
Right.
And so, you know, I never totally like hung my
hat
my ego hat on that. So
I see.
I was just like, that would be cool. I
okay.
love that.
Right.
And I still love like what I do kind of get like smug maybe is telling people, you know, oh yeah, I have this cool podcast with this awesome person, you know, like sharing that or I'll like mention you to somebody for some reason. And then I always have to complete that equation. People be like, who's Katie Rubin? And like, oh, she's this awesome friend of mine who is a spiritual healer and a comedian. And we have a podcast together and she's my podcast partner, you know? So, and then
I see.
Ask more.
Okay.
So on the one-to-one level, I get juice from it.
I see.
But I never believed we were going to be millions.
Wow. I wish I remember saying that because I feel like it's something I wouldn't have been brazen enough to say because it feels like it sets me up to be disappointed. And I know that.
Yeah.
So part of me is a little like, I'm not sure I ever said that. But
you definitely said it to me. Did you say it? I feel like you said it on the podcast at least once.
Okay. I want to hear it.
Yeah.
This one is one where it's like, if you're listening and you care to
and
do this.
You remember when?
Desmond, if you remember, Cassidy, if you can find it. Anyway, so you didn't hang your hat on it. So for you, it's not so disappointing.
Yeah.
Okay. That makes sense. I think that on a certain level for me, first of all, I want to say this in a Schrodinger's cat kind of way. It's not dead yet.
Nope.
There's always time.
Something could shift big time.
Big time. A. B. That makes me think that this is interesting. Let me gather this thought. This makes me think that, God, I'm having a lot of thoughts at one time that I have to parse out. I'm thinking that if I said that, which I just feel like is not my style, because I would have been too like afraid to think it. But anyway, I hear you. So let's say, but even if I didn't say it on here, or if I felt that way on some level, or if I got it from psychic, whatever, that on a certain level, I was holding that as a, almost like it has to be that. And
yeah.
And that's what we call an expectation. And then, of course, I would be disappointed and then carrying the resentment and the weight of that disappointment. Because, you know, the saying I probably talked about a lot on here of expectations or resentments waiting to happen. That's a good one. I'm just searching myself to see if like somewhere on some level I was like, I must have been holding that on some level, whether it was conscious or not, as an expectation.
Mm.
And like putting that. The weight of that expectation on the podcast and then just being regularly disappointed by it, but then pushing that disappointment aside,
mm-hmm.
being like, I'm not going to believe that. That's silly. Don't go there. I'm not going to, but not actually processing it.
Right.
And then when it came on so heavy that I had to stop doing the podcast for a few reasons. One of which was the weight of this felt very like, no, there's nobody here. I want to be very clear. People listening, you're not nobody. You matter. This is nobody meaning like if my expectation is 2 million people and there's 1,500, that's nobody to my expectation.
Yeah.
But that's not nobody. It's you guys matter.
Yeah.
And you matter a lot. But I'm saying from that unconscious perspective of like, this didn't do what it said it would, which is an expectation.
Yeah.
That I would be carrying a lot of disappointment that could, but if I don't process that disappointment, it's going to be resentment. That's how that goes.
Yeah.
So I think what happened is in these past months for me is it came up and it was heavy. So I just stopped because things, if it's too heavy, I just can't anymore. Stopped. And then stopping made me have to look at what's going on here. And then when we started talking again, because I had a little bit more juice on it, more energy to do it, I was able to admit, oh, I'm disappointed. This didn't fucking do what I hoped it would. And then in processing that, I realized, well, actually, I want to keep doing that, even if it never has more than 1,500 people listening, because I'm really getting a lot out of doing it.
Yep.
Which is what they teach for generators is we're supposed to do things that we get energy from doing. We do the things that are satisfying to do. And it had become unsatisfying for me in part, I think, because of the weight of that expectation.
Yeah.
In other part, because I felt like we had stagnated because reasons I could list, but they really feel like extensions of this for me.
Yeah.
Do you know what it was for you? Like that you were, where did your lack of juice come from? Do you think it was a response to mine or do you think it was something else? This is good.
I mean, I think there's a certain amount of, yeah, like for me at the time, being as overwhelmed as I was with everything else that was going on in my life.
I see.
When we started to sort of slack off and that, so this was giving me nothing more because it is true. My ego still did also need it to have an impact of some sort. I needed to, you know, be famous because of it or be, you know, we also had stopped getting emails from our listeners very much. And we, you know,
yeah,
people, God bless you all. We're all just having our fucking lives. Like, come on. It's not easy out there.
Mm-hmm.
But we both, I wasn't getting any.
The feedback.
And I, you know, I've done so much active work on the podcast and I've gotten so much healing from you and from, you know, conversations and like, it's been so important to me and that had also sort of stopped happening. So our conversations had started to stagnate, I think, and we weren't finding any new guests. And so there was just a stagnation occurring.
Yeah.
So we weren't getting any juice. And then it was an onus, like trying to schedule, what are we going to do next week? Okay. How about,
Right.
And it wasn't like, ooh, when can we do it again? It was like, when do we have to do it again?
Okay, so I'm hearing you say, because I'm just trying to get a simple answer to this question, and I think I'm hearing it. I'm going to say it back what I think I heard you say. I think I'm hearing you say, for you, the juice of it wasn't there because there was nothing in the feedback loop from the listeners that was like, we love it. We're here. We're responding positively. Is that right?
It's two parts.
Okay.
It's the listeners and it's our conversations. I wasn't getting.
Okay.
I wasn't getting the juice of, ooh, this is a fun conversation either.
Yeah.
I felt like we were both kind of spinning our wheels a little bit.
I see. Okay. Yeah. That's interesting. Yeah. I hear that.
I mean, this goes to something that's pretty important, I think. Also, like that you and I, when we came back to it, we made a deal and that was, we'll only do it if we have the energy for it. If we want to do it.
Right.
And that goes to like that relational thing that happened with me and Denise, where it was like, only if we choose.
Well, and that's the thing for the generator is they say you only do it anything ever when you actually have energy for it.
Yeah.
Not when you should on the schedule that you said.
Yeah.
When you have energy for it, like what a shift.
Yeah.
And we talk about this concept, we of the human design orientation, all the time so casually. But then when you actually put that into play in your life is weird compared to other people because people are all going to coaching and listening to Tony Robbins or whoever the fuck they listen to who are like, it's about consistency. Could be consistent about at least if you're consistent, every weight trainer, every diet coach, every life coach, everything consistent, positivity and consistency. That is not sacral energy. Sacral energy, you have it or you fucking don't.
Yeah.
And you can't manufacture it. So you make an excellent point. I think you're right, is the sacral energy wasn't there. And I'm just sort of owning that for me, because I have, by the way, I should say this. There's a channel. Yeah, just one. I think just one channel I have that connects my emotional center to my root. and to my sacral. Wait, I should pull it up. What I was going to say is that for me, everything is about, have I processed the emotions that are creating the heaviness I'm experiencing, or have I not? And anytime I want to make it about something else, it never is. So I'll say it again. Any heaviness I'm experiencing, or like if I don't have the sacral energy for something that I used to, it's either because the thing is done or because I haven't processed some emotion about the thing. Mm. Always, always, always. And so, hold on, I'm pulling up my chart. Sorry if that's ticky, ticky loud. I'm just trying to pull my chart up so I can speak intelligently about myself. But what I want to say about it is, it's so easy in those moments to be like, well, we ran out of things to say, or like, I was starting to run a narrative of like, every time we talk, I'm just doing a healing session for Cassidy.
That was also happening.
That wasn't feeling good. I was like, this is what, you got to pay me for this. I'm not happy. But I felt like there was nothing else pressing. So like, it was what was there, but I was being a little codependent, I think, about that, because I didn't want to be doing that, but I was afraid to say it to you because we had gotten into a little bit of a habit of it. And I didn't want you to feel bad, like I was rejecting you in any way. So I think I was like withholding that feeling because of that. Okay, this is what I'm looking at. And I'll come back to what we were just saying. So my emotional center is connected to the root. The root is the center that's like, I always think of it as like, it gives you traction on the ground. It's like, you've got the energy to go. It's like the people with open root often feel in the presence of people with definition in the root, like they have to keep up with us because we're the ones who are just like, can go forever.
Uh-huh.
And so when you have a channel connecting your emotional center to the root, anything in that channel that is bogged down because I haven't processed it is going to fuck with my root energy, my ability to like grip into the earth and go.
Yeah.
If that makes sense.
Yeah.
Anyway, it's just my way of understanding my own, oh, I needed to process some shit. Nada. Yeah.
Something else came up.
Yeah.
I don't want to move on. It's more like a side quest came up while we were processing the thing about expectations. And a little pop-up came for me of like, I realized I can't believe that this will be millions because I can't give myself that expectation.
Because?
Which is why I never moved to New York. It's why I never moved to LA. It's why I've always given myself short goalposts.
Okay.
So I will not be disappointed.
Oh, wow.
So I will not fall short of my own. So if I don't expect much of myself, then I will always exceed my expectations. And that sucks. I hate that.
Does it suck?
I guess it keeps me small.
Yeah, it maybe keeps you small.
It keeps me small. I'm the most important person in a really tiny world.
I understand. I'm proud of you for saying this. That takes bravery.
Yeah. That just popped into my consciousness when I was talking about, you know, not believing that we would be millions.
Do you know that you and I had a conversation about this long before we had the podcast that I have never forgotten and that has stayed with me? Here's how I remember it. Ooh. And then let's talk about it.
Juicy.
Yeah. I said, because, you know, I left and did LA and I left and did New York and whatever. And I said to you at some point in there, like, have you ever thought about going, or what's your relation? Do you want to go to LA, or where are you at with that? And you said, I don't want to start all over. No, I'm not going anywhere. I'm never going anywhere. And I remember being surprised because you were like the king of, I mean, you were booking a lot of shit and you were a very popular actor in the Bay and doing very well. And any actor doing well in a secondary market like ours, any actor would consider, if I'm killing it over here,
leveling up.
Of course. Like, there's money to be made. You could have like a life on top of a life, mm-mm, you know? Mm-mm. And you said, no, I'm not doing that. And I said, why? And you said, I don't want to start all over. And well, how does that land for you now? How does that land? Because I have so much to say about it just based on where I was at the time and blah, blah, blah. But you're having a response.
Well, because here I am at 55 and I'm about to start over.
Oh.
and I have a certain amount of juice for it.
Well, maybe it was timing.
Yeah, but boy, yeah.
Okay, wait.
Like you saying that, I know I said that and I feel it deeply that I said that. And I kind of even remember saying that. And I, it's not shame, it's not embarrassment, but I do feel like chagrin. I feel like, ah, fucking Cass, really?
Well, okay. But so this is so good because this is such a good example of how, oh, this is really good. I need to hear this too. This is a good example of how we need control so badly that we will control our lives to be smaller and worse just for the sake of the control.
Yep.
Isn't that interesting?
Yep.
I do the shit out of that.
Yep.
And that is such a great example of that, where it's like, I have my little pond and I am the biggest froggy here. I'm not going anywhere. This is comfortable for me. I'm in control of this. And on another look, framing it from another angle, we could say that's a smart fucking move. That's also a smart move because if you're winning, like if it ain't broke, don't fix it kind of thing.
Yeah.
However, the other side of it is what you're saying right now, which is like, man, I decided I'm in control of the universe. I'm not going to start over. And then the universe said, that's charming. You will be starting over now.
I wonder if there's anything in my profile. You know how yours is like at 50, you'll do boop, jump off the roof and all that.
Yeah.
Like phases. I'm curious about phases for me.
Well, okay. You're a 1-3, right?
I think so. Yeah.
Look at it. Tell me.
I
love
that you know all these things and I can never hang on to them. Yeah, of course I'm a 1-3.
Okay. Well, listen, this is important. Oh my God. I'm like going to cry. I'm so excited about this. Oh my God, 900 things to say about it.
What's funny is you're about to say things that we've probably said and I can't fucking retain. And you've told me these so many times before, but let's say it again.
But there's a reason for that too. Human design, they say it in the classes and nobody believes it until you experience it yourself. It's a time bomb. It goes tick, 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 boom. And the moment it goes boom, you don't know when the fuck that's going to be. And what I mean by that is, It's a little interesting. It's a little interesting. It's a little interesting. Huh. And then one day you're like, holy fuck. It's truth incarnate. It has all the answers. I need to know everything. And then all of a sudden you remember everything and then you're hungry for it. That's how it was for me. That's how it's been for everyone I've ever fucking seen. Deal with it.
Love it.
So you're right on track. Okay. That. First of all, you have a third line body. The third line. Ugh. The third line only can learn. Literally. Is incapable of learning any other way but through trial and error. You have to do it, bump up against it, fall down, and get up to know not to run into the wall with your face. So in order to learn something like, hey man, maybe don't stay a big fish in a small pond forever, you would have to stay a big fish in a small pond forever to learn it. And then you would probably need somebody else to come along and influence the field in order to shove you out of the pond. Because another thing they say about the third line is that the third line, everything that happens for third lines happens through bumping into people. Literally, you're out and about, you bump into someone, you get a job. You're out and about, you bump into someone, XYZ happens. I'm thinking, case in point, when you brought me our friend David to work in my staging business because you met him at karaoke.
Yeah.
I needed a guy.
And I found a guy.
You had a guy immediately because you had bumped into him at a fucking karaoke. And he helped me a lot. He made the business possible along with you and Dylan and everybody else. Anyway, so you have to, and you're a generator, so you're here living in response. I can't help myself but do the thing I'm about to do. Let me think of the best way to do it. Here, I got it. Okay. This is also, I'm going to talk about you, Rami, and you're not here. But I know you're listening. So this is an example of where a Rami figure in this scenario takes action for themselves in a way, right? They want to sell the damn house. They want that for themselves.
Yes.
They understand the impact and the ripples that will have on people. So they don't and they don't and they don't until they must. And then they do. And you could say that is an anti-codependent action that they're taking. Like the nine-ness might say like, I don't want to. Let's not make anybody uncomfortable. I love these people. It's about them. What do they need? Their whole life. And then finally they go, I want what I want. And it has a challenging impact, like any ripple in the ocean does. But then it pushes all them little baby birdies right out the nest.
Yep.
In a way that the birdies might have needed in the first place.
Yep.
And this is the teaching they teach us, all of us dealing with codependency over and over and over, that is so hard to internalize for myself as well, which is you are never doing anyone else a favor by taking care of them against your own wishes. In other words, if you put other people's needs above yours, where it's not a win-win, nobody's actually winning.
Yep.
So Rami has a personal need. I'm speaking for Rami. Rami, please correct me anywhere I'm incorrect about any of this. But it's such a good example. I can't help myself. So I'm ready to be wrong if I'm wrong about any of this. But let's say Rami gets I got to do this. I got to make these moves for me. But the 9 trap says, but I don't have consensus. They don't want it. So I shouldn't.
Yep.
And then they withhold and withhold. And then you stay a comfortable birdie in a comfortable nest who never grows and never is shoved out of the nest and has to go to a new pond.
Yep.
And that's actually limiting you.
Yep.
They're not trying to limit you. And this is not about blaming anybody. This is not a...
No, not at all. No.
This is just naming how the mechanics of when we overly caretake, how the mechanics of that works for everyone involved. And I don't think any of this happened on any bad timeline. And I don't think anybody did anything wrong. I just think we have to name it, because for the people listening, anybody, if you're out there and you're like, I really intuitively know I need to do this thing, but people are going to have feelings about it for a while, that they're going to be disappointed, hurt, sad, mad. So I guess I just won't. If it's really intuitive for you and you need it for you, you are not being bad selfish. You are being appropriate selfish. In a way that will push those birdies out of their own nest and cause them to grow.
Yeah.
We rob other people of their growth when we caretake them. And again, I don't even know that it's correct to say there was any caretaking going on here. I'm just saying it's a good example of you're in the middle of being like, the world made some choices that you were the effect of, and you've gotten on board. Great.
Yep.
But the world made those choices.
Yeah.
And thank God.
Yeah.
Because who knows what gifts are going to come out of this big, huge sea change.
And the big thing that is, you know, and I've said this before, like the thing that like Denise said to me almost right away was, oh, you get to make a choice for the first time in your fucking life. And I was like, oh, I felt both so called out and so seen in the same moment.
That's really good. Now that brings me, what she said, to the first line, your personality line.
Uh-huh.
Of course you haven't been making any fucking decisions. Here's why. You have a first line personality. What is the first line doing? The first line, spending all its time. First line comes into the body. Little baby Cassidy is born, having no idea what the fuck is going on. Unlike the second line that walks in with this sense of like, I've been here. I'm a natural at this. Okay, I know what to do. None of that for the first line. So the first line spends all its time from a place of a low-grade anxiety all the time, trying to create a foundation of truth, a foundation of reality, a foundation of community. I'm just going to create my foundation, because how does this work? What, I am anxious all the time. Nothing is certain. I'm going to create a foundation, which is what you did.
Uh-huh. Yeah. What's your first line? I mean, what's your...
I'm a 6'2".
And what is 6 in that regard again?
The 6 is... I'm like such a 6, it's dumb. The 6 is the one looking beyond. What's next in conscious evolution? What's possible now? It's the spirituality line. They call it the Buddha line. It's the Buddha on the hill who's the role model of being their self.
Yeah.
So you look to the 6 line to go like, she's being fucking weird pretty consistently. I guess I could be weird consistently, or she's being loud and doing what you shouldn't as a woman, or whatever people project, you know. But that's what the 6 line personality is. It's like we see that we're looking at what's the next thing, and we're already living into that next beyond sort of idea. And we're living there because we believe in it, because it's all we can fucking see.
Yeah.
And so it's like a projection field thing. People look to a 6 line and go, I'm looking up to that person. They're as a role model of what it looks like to be yourself. Not as a role model of like, do everything Katie Rubin does. People certainly don't do that. But they look and they go, that's a person not being someone else.
Well, and we could probably bring that back to the original concept that we've been discussing too, of your frustration or your tension around lack of reach. If like if you're out here trying, you're a Cassandra. We talked about this the first time where you're like,
okay,
you're out there going, y'all look, hey, look where the world, what is possible here? Look at these next steps. Look at these spiritual truths. Hey, hello.
Coco.
Yeah.
Nobody
echo,
cares.
Echo.
Yeah. Yeah.
Tumbleweed, tumbleweed. And that is going to fucking, that's going to kill you after a while if you don't feel heard, I would imagine.
But actually.
Or at least that's what caused some of the pain.
Yeah, but that's not a six line thing. That's an ego thing.
I would say that's the ego thing in response to the six. Like that's your egoic whatever, but it's this, but the six line thing of I am seeing so much.
Right.
And
it's the.
And then your ego comes in and goes, look at this bitch seeing so much. You guys, why the fuck aren't you listening?
Yeah. Yeah. 100%.
So that's where the million, the lack of millions hurts.
It's a six line flavored ego.
That's a good way of putting it.
There you go.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I was trying to draw similar conclusions, and I think I did okay getting us there.
You're doing great. The second line, though, is that, and I have that second line body, is such a hermit that it's really not concerned with reach or being seen, which is part of why it was such a tension inside myself of like, what is this? You know, and it's just old, for me, it's like childhood stuff. It's like stuff about, like in my childhood, so I was an only child, and my dad was not into my mom. He wasn't into her. And she knew it. She wouldn't have consciously been able to tell you. I watched my whole childhood is watching her just try to get him to want to hang out with her. And he didn't fucking want to, because between you and me and everybody listening, she was difficult. I wouldn't have wanted to either. However, he was difficult in that he was fully unavailable, but stuck around, which is fucking painful. If you don't want to be around, move along. So a lady has an opportunity to fucking find somebody who wants to be around. So they both were playing into this weird 1950s, whatever obligation, stay together, whatever they were doing. Who the fuck knows? Point is, I was this little funny thing. I would do funny stuff. I remember literally the moment in my life where I realized, oh, if I make it funny, she laughs and she's not mad anymore. Like she was always mad. She was mad at me. She was mad at him. She was mad at herself. She was mad at the world. And if I could make her laugh, she wasn't mad anymore. And then they maybe weren't going to fight. And then I maybe was going to have a better day. And like a switch flipped. And I went, I get it. Life is you make them see you. You make them like you by making them laugh. And then everything's going to be okay. And it was like an early addiction.
That just was such a reflection of, I'll be vague, but a very dear friend of mine told me, another very dear friend of mine, in addition to the dear friend that you are, almost that exact same story, but it was their father.
Mm.
Father, rage, child gets put in front of father. Literally, everybody else in the family would go, here, make father laugh to stop father from being unpleasant.
Right.
And then that pattern is kind of drive a deep groove. Anyway, it just came. You just described it almost verbatim. So that was interesting. Like, I wonder how.
That's cool.
Wonder who else has that fucking pattern. Like,
well, that's why I want to talk about it, because anything we share vulnerably here, it's hope. It touches people. Like, it gives people permission to own their own vulnerability. Right?
Yeah. Yeah. Jesus.
And I want to be fair, and just to finish that loop. To be fair to my mother, even though I don't speak with her, and I don't plan to speak with her for the rest of my life. To be fair to her, I know with all her challenges as a person, she would never, her point of view would never be that that's all I was like a dancing monkey. Like she,
of course not.
You know, she cared about a lot of things, not just that I was funny. It's just what my kid brain did
right
with that is what I'm naming. You know, I don't mean this as a, she made me the monster I am. It's more just like, oh, my brain did a thing. It switched. It decided. I decided a thing and then built an entire fucking life on it. So coming back to the original thing we're talking about, I honestly think the podcast became weighty to me because I was on a certain level unconsciously still trying to get that approval from the world this time.
Mm.
I'm going to get all the people to look at me and that will validate my existence. And then I'll be loved and mom won't be mad. So when the world wasn't looking, I was sad.
Yeah.
because mom, then I don't have anything. And so by processing it, I got to more and which is what happens with every piece of something we process, my friends, is we get to more and more self-love, the real kind where you're like, oh, I feel relieved that that weight is gone because I processed it, which leaves me with more connection to me, actual me.
Yeah.
So now I'm just here with me and I love me and we're good. And we can do a podcast out of for fun.
And to be, maybe I shouldn't call it out, but like, this is the most sparkling conversation we've had in 6 months on this podcast.
Yeah.
It's the.
That's my point.
Yeah. Like we're actually fucking engaged again. And like, that's, oof, that gives me, that makes me teary. Cause like, that's the, that was the juice that.
That's right.
Had drained out for me.
I agree.
Yeah. This I didn't want to just get a fucking healing every week. That's.
I know. I know you didn't.
That's not fun.
I know. Yeah. And neither of us did. We were just kind of like, how do we on the fumes, ride the fumes, keep it alive.
Keep. Oh, please, man. Listen. Please, please listen.
Right. Right. Mommy, please love me.
Mommy, please listen.
Do you love me now?
Oh, God.
Side note, I want to do a shout out on this point and we can wrap it up if we want. But I was listening to Nikki Glaser on Armchair Expert this week. I high recommend that conversation because they talk about she made a joke about Dax Shepard on Stern, that Howard Stern, that got back to Dax. And Dax on the podcast for a couple weeks had been talking about it and his feelings about it and dealing with it. And he and his co-host were like, we should have her on so we can talk about this. And she came on and the conversation they have is so wonderful because everybody on both sides is just taking so much ownership of all of it. And it's handled, it's just, it's fantastic.
Oh,
so,
I love that. I will listen to that. That's the shit I love. I mean, I love it when comedians do that because comedians are the smartest people on the fucking planet, the good ones. And when they then get into like truly owning into their shit, it's as deep as when philosophical, spiritual people do it.
100%.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's good shit.
Yeah.
I love you. I'm so glad we talked about this.
Yes. All right.
And I get to see you socially this evening.
That's right. We're going to party for Katie's birthday.
I'm 500 years old.
You
are. Very excited.
512.
I'm such an older woman now.
You're an older, mature woman.
Mm. Indeed, with breasts like a young, buxom gal.
Nice. True?
Two breasts.
Two of them. That's how they're like.
One, two. Two breasts.
If you only had one, that would be all right as well.
We'd love you just as you are. Grandma Reuben.
Gorgeous, beautiful, mature woman.
Uniboobed woman.
Woman. God bless you, Katie.
God bless
Reuben.
America. Next time we should talk because I want to put a pin in a thing. We did that reading last time.
Yeah.
Right? We had Rami on and we did, that's what we did, right?
Yep.
Okay, great. And I had feelings after that I'd like to talk about next time, which were like, I was like feeling like a lame psychic because I want to be the kind of psychic who's like, on January 3rd, the following thing will occur. And on this person will get fired, but that person won't. I mean, we could ask one by one and I could get answers. But anyway, I don't tend to be that kind. And I was having afterburn after that of being like, why can't I channel shit like that that's practical for people instead of being like, the universal truth is the following. And it's, I'm like, but then after I was feeling neurotic about it, I was like, that's the most Aquarian way to channel. That's how Aquarians are. So of course I channel that way. It's just everything. We're not in control.
No, you got the answers you were supposed to get because you did ask some questions and then they were like, yeah, whatever. That's a cute question.
I know. But
what you really need to know is that this.
We're not in control of what happens. Okay, I love you.
Then why do we do anything? Okay, do.
Let's talk about that next time.
The work that you must do, and I'll see you tonight.
Do work that you have energy.
Everybody, I will see you all tonight. Every one of you.
And do work that you have energy for.
Oh, yeah.
But no other work.
Only, well, that's.
We have to change our tagline.
It's a boring tagline, not at all cute. Do the work that you have energy for and no other work.
Only do work you have energy for.
But that's only true for generators.
Yeah, it's kind of true for everybody, but you're right. It's kind of true in general. We'll make it more nuanced, so it's okay. Very long.
When we say do the work, we'll say do the appropriate work is what we mean, but it's a dumb phrase, so.
How about this? Do the work that is correct when you follow strategy and authority as determined by human... Goodbye! Love you, bye! You asking for all of the answers? Say what? All of the answers? Yeah,
all the answers! Hey guys, thanks for listening. We'd love to hear from you. Please email us with your questions so that we have questions to answer in the Akashic Records. Our email address is allanswerspod@gmail.com. That's allanswerspod@gmail.com. And if you'd like to find us on Facebook or Twitter, it's @allanswerspod. Thank you.
Mixed and edited by Desmond McNeese for We Mixed It, LLC. Go to whatsoundsawesome.com.
I'm recording, by the way, if you care.
Okay.